Good morning and welcome to Blackmore Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today. One of the upcoming milestones of note is the Waka Waka Nation is celebrating its National Day this month, and unfortunately I can't go, but we do have representatives from our government going down there to pass on a gift.
It really is, and I'm glad you actually brought up the mention of Cook. Cook had some sort of excuse to say, oh, I couldn't recognise they were there. He knew there were people here. He knew there were people here that held law.
Hey, Bill and Gunnar, welcome to Blackmore Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today as we broadcast right across the world, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumblebee Pro Media 98.7 FM. If you're listening inside of Australia, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service, which is broadcasting to the major cities and other places in regional centres, I guess, across the continent. And we just thank you for listening wherever you are, and for taking in some of the information, and hopefully using it to your advantage. People, you don't have to agree with what we say on this program, obviously, but it is there to provide an alternative voice to the, the modern-day narrative inside of Australia that is sort of doesn't seem to work for a lot of the mob. And but anyway, Ganyara Yirilum, and we've got Vico joining us today to discuss a few things. One of the upcoming milestones of note is the Waka Waka Nation is celebrating its National Day this month, and unfortunately I can't go, but we do have representatives from our government going down there to pass on a gift. Ganyara, these things are quite important. Seems like yesterday when we started this particular journey as a government, although the tribe's been here since, you know, time immemorial, let's say, but the actual administration side of it is something that wasn't necessarily here when Cook came past. Obviously, he was used to paper and seals and stamps, and the Yidinji had their law, but he couldn't understand it, for example, and that's his fault, not Yidinji's. But Yidinji is beginning to exercise its and assert its sovereignty in that space, in that we know that Yidinji owns the land pursuant to their law, the law of the land. But what was missing was this administrative Yidinji-specific pieces of paper, because up until recently, the Yidinji people could only use one piece of paper, and that was an Australian one or an Australian document, for example. Now, if they want to, they can use two or one or whatever they want. They don't have to use any of them. But, the rule of law is important for the world of contracts, and the Yidinji Nation, in terms of interacting with the world, has forged its own legal personality, identity, and expressing its right to self-representation and other things that are important. More importantly, the Australian government and the UN nations, the United Nations, that is, are also supporting Indigenous rights, inclusivity, and all these other things. It's a very important milestone for the Waka Waka as well.
It really is, and I'm glad you actually brought up the mention of Cook. Cook had some sort of excuse to say, oh, I couldn't recognise they were there. He knew there were people here. He knew there were people here that held law. You know, he was told in his secret orders, his so-called secret orders, he opened when he got to sea, when you go there and if you find natives there, try and buy a bit of land off them. If not, just leave them alone and come back. Now, the reason we created this government was to give the Australian government no excuse to say, we can't recognise them, they're tribal, we can't see them. There's no excuse now, because we created something similar to theirs, so they got no excuse. Not so much so we can fit in with them, but they've got no excuse to say, oh, you don't live by the rule of law, you don't do this, you don't do that. The government is here for a reason, and the government is here to under direction of the tribe. Now, the tribal people are the ones that do treaties, tribe to tribe, you know, like you're talking with Waka Waka and that, Kunjin, wherever it may be, they've always done deals, they've always done treaties, they've always agreed that when you come to our country, you get permission to come in. When we go to their country, you get permission to come in. These are long-standing treaties that have been thousands and thousands of years old. But when Cook come, I think he went back and lied. He was a born liar. That's why he got sort of speared somewhere else. He was a liar. He went back and said, oh, there's no one there. Meanwhile, the natives were chasing him off the beach. You know, the natives were chasing him away. You go back to where you come from and don't come here. You know, we own this place, and, you know, so they know the natives are here. There was no excuse to say, oh, we used terra nullius, oh, they were uncivilised, they didn't have this, they didn't have that. And then in 1992, they reversed the position of terra nullius. That's the only mechanism they used to sort of acquire the place, or how they said they got sovereignty. How did they get sovereignty? Oh, terra nullius, no one is here. No more. It was overturned. It was overturned. The High Court said, no, it was an act of settlement. There was no conquest. There was no war. It was an act of settlement. And under the act of settlement, there's only two ways you can get it. One is terra nullius, no one there. So you move in on vacant land where there's no civilised population, or you do through treaty. I wonder what they're talking about now. So we talk about tribal treaties, but now they've got no excuse to not be able to come and talk to us because we have a government in place that's similar to theirs. They can see it.
Yeah, I think it's really important to people to understand that whole position of I remember the first time that I went down this path and there was concerns from friends and people saying that you're going to get deported to Christmas Island or this, that and the other. If I was a sovereign citizen maybe, Yidinji is not a sovereign citizen. Obviously, it's the original law holder here. So I had absolute faith in the Yidinji tribe and the society and the laws and that God created Yidinji, you know. Man created Australia, for example. So it's really important to understand that we weren't an outlaw. I wasn't an outlaw. I wasn't under Australian law anymore. That's fine. But I'm under Yidinji law. And that's the strongest law here on this land. So it doesn't mean I go and make a nuisance of myself and this, that and the other, because obviously we have to hold the Yidinji Nation up high and stop it from falling into disaffection and disrepute. But that's where I think it's important that, like, the Waka Waka and other nations that are moving down this pathway keep doing what they're doing. And that is having the absolute firm belief that their law is first and Australia is second or third in time.
The biggest thing I can say to all the tribal nations is don't get suckered into this so-called sovereign citizen pseudo-law rubbish. Don't get suckered into that. If you go and read a native title determination, perfect example. There's one over in West Australia which is so, it's just a fantastic little paragraph. You own this place under your law. Under your law, not some pseudo-law rubbish, not some pseudo-law BS. This is absolutely what the federal court is saying. The federal court of Australia is saying, use as the owners that are separate to Australia, you own this under your law, not Australian law. Why do you want to come into Australia to own nothing? You know, if you go back to your law, you'll be the owners of your property. In Mabo, they said the Aboriginal people underwrote Australia. Why don't you act like the underwriters? Why don't you act like the owners of the place? I'm not saying that out of nastiness. I'm saying go back to there. Get out of the native trooper mind. You're there on your law, under your lord, owning your country. So if you go back and form your government, that there's no excuse that Australia can't deal with you, because tribal people are God's kids. They can't see the Commonwealth of Australia is godless. When I say the Commonwealth of Australia, I mean the paper thing. Not the people that interact with it, but the piece of paper is godless. There's no colour in law. There is no gender in law. There is no, if you take notice, you know, it's got nothing to do with the man or woman. It's a piece of dead paper that's created subject to the Australian Constitution. How did they get the right to bring that here to force our people to be bound by that piece of paper? It was just through uneducation. They you're not allowed to speak language. Why? Because they couldn't understand it. Not allowed to understand law. Why? Because you're keeping your law alive. You're keeping your sovereignty alive. The one that they mentioned in the Uluru Statement that said coexist. Now, I'm glad you mentioned the sovereign citizen rubbish. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's the best minds that Australia could muster at the time that come about. Now, they were appointed by the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition to go forward and try and work out where the sovereignty of the Aboriginal people, if it's real or not. And the best minds come back and said, yes, it is real, it is there, and it is first in time, and it is the owner of the place, and it possibly coexists, or it coexists with the possible sovereignty of Australia. Our sovereignty is first. As owners, we are there under law that's separate to Australia, and their law may be coexisting with us. Now, they have no right to say we're the boss law. The tribes are the boss law. And that's the important part to remember, because it's first in time.
Yeah, I think there's an acceptance amongst our own mob, you know, and our peers, Yirrkala, that the tribal elders are the leaders, let's say, and most societies follow that particular structure. I think it was Prime Minister John Howard that said the colonies were settled without treaty or consent. That is an exciting opportunity now for the tribes to actually correct the wrongs, settle the past, and secure the future for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very challenging idea to do that because, you know, realistically what the first sovereign people of this continent have the opportunity to do is correct all that. And as you said, settle the past and secure the future. Well, that really means that everybody can come together. And it's the tribal laws. It's the way that the society was run before colonization here is one of the key factors to achieving everyone coming together. And mostly that the governing bodies of Australia have denied that opportunity, don't want to have that opportunity because it removes them from making the decisions. And we already know that those decisions that are being made in the current time are failing. They're not working as a society, whether it's here or in other countries throughout the world. So big time, it's really an opportunity for it to step up and claim your right position.
Ganyara, a number of times you've spoken about under what doctrine can Australia prove its ownership over this continent. And I know that constitutional lawyers have had issues with that. They can't really provide a solid answer. But, I mean, we're not waiting for that. You know, the Yidinji Nation is charging this government to move forward and telling it to re-establish and reinvigorate the law in a way that the international community can see it.
Look, a number of times we've sat with the constitutional experts, those that are on the expert panels, you know, from academia right through. There's nowhere, they got no doctrine, because once they said the place was not terra nullius in 92, the High Court said that, not just some Johnny come lately, the High Court said, no, terra nullius is overturned, we reject it implicitly. The whole lot is all a fraud, it's all fake. Okay, so what other mechanism was through the Act of Settlement? What other mechanism is there to allow Australia or the British to assert their sovereignty at the time and then hand that on to Australia? Okay, we're talking about no terra nullius. You mean an act of treaty. A treaty has to be perfected properly and there has to be an exchange of title. The title has to go to Australia, but it hadn't been done. It's never been perfected in any way, shape or form, which then brings about the old iudi posititis. It goes back to the original. If you can't prove it, it goes back to the original people. You mean the original people that talk about a native title. You own this place pursuant to your law. If you want to go and get it inside native title, you get nothing. You know, we're only just talking earlier about the natives only got camping rights on their land. Good go. We own the place. But if you want to be an Aboriginal Australian, you get camping rights only because you're an Australian. Just like the rest, all Australian identities, I'm not talking about man or woman, I'm talking about identities. All of them are trespassers. The whole lot are unlawful non-citizens. They're boat people. If you want to use the Australian identity, you become a boat people who is on this country unlawfully. That, you know, now, the rest of the world can see that. It's very plain and very simple because when they say in native title, you own this place pursuant to your law, not Australian law, why don't you go back to the ownership rights? Why don't you go back to where you can then perfect the treaty? Because, and like John Howard said back in 92, a nation cannot treaty with itself. Absolutely right. An Aboriginal Australian has got no right to negotiate a treaty for and on behalf of the tribe that they may have connection to. And that's an important concept. If you're going to be Aboriginal Australian, you've got no right to treaty. You've got no right to talk about it.
Well, your boss is the King of Australia, which is Charles, and that's what we saw in very colourful fashion, Senator Lydia Thorpe saying, you're not my king. But, you know, that's true on one level as a woman, but ultimately, she gets paid in crown dollars. She works for the Australian political system, which is the Senate. It is only Australians can get elected there. So I'm not saying it's like a double standard, but there may be a lack of understanding as to the tribal world and the Australian world, let's say.
A very profound lack of understanding, because I've spoken with Lydia and I said it's your legal identity that's got no right to talk tribal stuff. Lydia Thorpe You know, the woman herself is good. Lydia is good. But when she uses the Australian name Thorpe on it, she becomes an Australian citizen, and that Australian citizen must take an oath to the King and Right of Australia. And I say that very specifically, the King and Right of Australia, because that King has many crowns. That Charlie has many crowns. King and Right of Papua New Guinea, King and Right of Canada, King and Right of New Zealand. So he's got multiple personalities. And Lydia, the woman, when she becomes an Australian, wants to be a senator, she's got to swear allegiance to the King and Right of Australia. And she must do that because she wants to be there and take the pay packet of Australia. But if she went back to her tribal standing, all of a sudden the King of Australia then does not have any doctrine to come here and assert sovereignty. Even Right of the King of UK, it doesn't matter. King and Right of Australia, they've got no right to assert sovereignty over the tribes who have never ceded sovereignty.
Yeah, I mean, that goes for anyone, not just Lydia. That's Jacinda, Senator Jacinda Price and Senator McCarthy, the whole lot. They are bound by Australian rules and law, and that's fine. We understand that. But Vicky, I'll bring you in here. More than ever, the world can, anyone in the world now, most people that live in Guillemot, let's say, can access the internet and find out things. So a lot of this stuff, even though it may not be flavour of the month, sovereignties and tribal sovereignties not being taught at schools, for example, but people feel like there is a change or there's some sort of misconnect, which obviously they can research things and it's something obviously you've done when you came and talked with us about the Yidinji Nation and what was it and all those things. But now that kind of information sort of seeping out into the general public and into the international community. And I think that's a positive thing. And in terms of people having a choice and actually getting understanding on the whole global situation.
Well, we're noticing globally now that there is a very big conscious shift to being reconnected with the land that you walk on, the land you live on, the land that sustains you, and the land that sustains our communities. The biggest problem that I see happening is a lot of sovereign groups out there are teaching how to become more sovereign, how to become more independent, but that's not connecting them to the land. You're disconnecting out of one system, but you're not going to anywhere. You're just floating through the sky. You're a non-entity because you're only someone that's connected to Mother Earth. So having your own sovereignty in a system that you've designed or someone else designed and you plug in yourself into that, doesn't connect you to the ground. So when I first had a look at the Yidinji government and the structure of the government, it gave me a really solid connection to Earth. So I became more aligned with where I wanted to move because I was connected to Earth. The Earth sustains me, sustains my family, sustains the community. And that connection keeps me highly motivated to help the Yidinji government grow and assert its sovereignty because it does have true sovereign claim to the ground.
Oh, 100%. And you know, that's where I think it's really important to mention Uncle Bumi and there are many others that I've spoken with recently that are continuing to encourage us to keep moving forward because they know that it's for their children's children. It's not necessarily for us to enjoy right now, but it is the right... I wouldn't say fight even. It's the right way to go about it, to express the sovereignty. And once people start to realise that they can't change Australia or they can't change that world, but under their law they can certainly create and build something that's in line with their philosophical morals and ethics and things like that, Ganyara.
Not only theirs, but it's a global moral position. I'm glad Vicko brought it up because once they jump out of Australian law, they become outlaws. There's one law here that was here first. That's the Aboriginal law. It was here forever and a day. That's the one they talk about in native title determinations. That's the one they talk about in the Uluru Statement. That's the one they keep talking about. We need to do a treaty. The next in law, the next in time in law is the Australians. If you jump out of Australia, where are you going? What law are you going to have? Law's a double-edged sword. Law is there to be abided by, but it's also there to protect you. Now, Australia has no right to assert sovereignty over the Aboriginal people. Their law is first. So whatever is in your country, the old maxim of law, whatever is inside your territory is subject to your law and authority. Whose law and authority is Australia subject to? If it can't prove its doctrine on how it got here and to assert sovereignty, it's bound by our law, the Yidinji law here. It's always been here. It's here forever and a day. Next in time was the British. when they come. They withdrew and went back to England in 86 was the final time, left. Then they left something here to hold the fort, and that's the Australians. Now, a lot of people, I hear a lot of people say, oh, Australia belongs on Norfolk Island. Absolute BS. Australia is a piece of paper that's created that hangs on the wall of a building down there in Canberra. And what people own that bit of land there? You think about that. They're the ones that were first in time there, not Australia. Now, Australia is a piece of paper, and everyone wants to abide by that. Now, I see the sovereign citizen pseudo-law rubbish. They're jumping out. Oh, I want to get out of Australia. It's wrong, and it's this, and it's that. Good go. You're jumping straight out into our world, into the tribal world, where you will be under tribal law. If you invade someone's territory, there's capital punishment. This is what I'm saying to everyone. Be very careful, if you want to get away from Australian law, that you don't offend the tribal law that's always been here, because there is capital punishment. Like around the world, right, there is capital punishment everywhere. So, but if you come out into our world, you've got to understand you've got to be subject to the law of the tribe. There is no other way around this. You cannot get first in time because the tribes were here first. That law is superior law over all law on this country. So understand what you're doing if you want to go down the pseudo-law road. Understand that. Australia is second in time now because the British withdrew. But they did not ever, because this is what's so important about the Act of Settlement, they did not acquire sovereignty properly. It was never perfected. So the sovereignty still resides with the tribes. The reason they want to keep the tribes inside Australia is so they don't go back and enforce that sovereignty that's always been here. They don't want the Aboriginal people to do that because all of a sudden Australia loses its authority over all things on the tribal territory. Very important to understand this. So when you go down that road of pseudo-law, that's why I said this crazy world of pseudo-law, you're going to become an outlaw. And there's no law. There's nothing to protect you from the Aboriginal tribes then that want to I suppose, appoint capital punishment for it trespassers and invaders on its country.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I wanted to say that, you know, we've got great examples of UNI, asserting tribal law and the Crown not really interfering with that. Same with the Bonjon and Ballard versus the Crown back in the the imperial law world. So there is, I often come across some people saying, oh, you know, we've got the, we've done the research, we've done the, you know, we understand the imperial law, we've got the Magna Carta and all that kind of stuff. And I said, that's English law, that belongs over there. Or they'll talk about this, that, and the other. And even the Bible law is important, but it's still not from Yidinji. It's a different songline, let's say, you know, like, Yidinji law is different from Arunda law, or it's similar in nature when you look at the book of Leviticus in the Bible, for example. The marriage law is very, very similar to a lot of the societies here, and the laws are very similar, but it's still over there. It's still from that side. And so it's good because it's a good book because Australia bought it here. It's a good book to hold up to them and say, well, this is your law here. This is what it says here. Thou shalt not steal. This is what it says here. Moses says to the Israelites that if you're going to appoint a king over you, make sure he's not a foreigner. So, sorry, Charles, you can't be your dingy king. We already got people here who can do that. So it's one of those things where it's really important to understand the law system and not to offend.
I'm just glad you brought up the Bible. Remember going back a few years, we went and saw the local bishop? Remember that? We had a 15-minute audience. Okay, you've got 15 minutes. 2 hours later, he's still offering lamingtons and coffee and tea. Well, you want to have a bit of a sit-down? We have a bit of a yarn about this stuff. We better... So all that really was asked was, you know, how do you stand up the front on your pulpit on Sundays and say, you shall not covet another man's land. You shouldn't steal. Oh, do you want a cup of tea? Or do you want some more lamingtons? We had to make an excuse to get out of there. This was how crazy it was. And then you come back to, you know, the sovereignty issue. It was Senator Scullion in 2007. He said, look, yous mob are 30 to 40 years ahead of everyone else in this field. Australia doesn't know what to do with you. Senator Waters, same thing. We don't know what to do with Yidinji. We can't address what they're saying. Because we said right back in the start, we own the place. This is going back, you know, geez, 12, 13, 14 years now. We said to the world, we own the place. We're going to act like we own the place. And we formed a government so there was no excuse why they couldn't come and talk to us. And this is what threw them. So it was such a curve ball when it come to them. They didn't know what to do. How do they address us? How do they because the sovereignty hasn't been ceded. Once you start a certain sovereignty properly, not under some pseudo-law, make-believe stuff. We've had every single different one. I've got the keys to the vault. This is, I've got all this money and it's going to pour in, and we've seen keys and everyone that every, you go down and stand on your left foot like this and you will turn around and the world will settle the debt with you. No more. That's not going to happen. You've got to assert your sovereignty, because in that court case down there, down in southeast Queensland, the judge said, what are you doing in my court? If you claim to be sovereign, what are you doing in my court? But most importantly, where's your court to assert your sovereignty?
The Boulogne Shire Council one.
That's the one, yeah, you know. Yeah. And it was a rather crazy case, because you're going into their world through their identity to argue about matters that are unrecognisable to Australia because they're external. There's no treaty to let Australia recognise that mob over there.
Yeah, it's private. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was, without mentioning names, one of those groups contacted me and asked me, look, we know that Yidinji's doing this, that and the other, and unfortunately one of our people have been locked up. And I said, okay, fair enough. I mean, that happens, you know. But what can you provide me, what evidence do you have that your tribe is doing this, that and the other? And then they said, oh, no, we're doing it under this other thing. And as soon as they said that, I said, well, what is it? And then they showed me and I said, yeah, good luck. They didn't do it. They went with one of these groups, and that particular individual was, I think, under the Mental Health Act or of some sort. And I do encourage Australia to do that, because they had to see, they have to control their Australians. And, you know, the opening of the law ceremony here in Ghimoy is really important, because those practitioners of law in the Supreme Court of Queensland, while they don't have the written permission to operate here in terms of their world, while we are building our nation and while we're moving forward, it's important that they control their individuals and their nationals, because that lawlessness is a threat to both Dingy and the Commonwealth.
Look, I see this latest stuff about the sovereign citizens getting disarmed. I see that coming about the internet quite a lot now. And Australia has to do it. It has a duty of care to the natives whose country they're upon unlawfully. Now, they've got to disarm these people who want to jump out and become outlaws. They've got to get the firearms off them, because those firearms are registered to the Commonwealth of Australia. They're registered through the states, state of Victoria, state of Queensland, it doesn't matter. They're all states of Australia. And they have a duty of care to the people whose land they're upon without law. Australia has no sovereignty to tell us what to do. But it's got the authority to tell its Australian citizens, remember, a firearm licence is a privilege inside Australia. That's all Australian stuff. Now, they've got to disarm these people that may go out and want to shoot natives. Now, I was talking to a few people up there on the Tablelands a while back. And I said, look, this is what the state of play is. This is how the Aboriginals haven't ceded sovereignty. The politicians, they go, we'll go and shoot politicians and we'll shoot natives. We'll shoot the Aboriginal people. What a solution that is. Well, that's a crazy one, because they tried shooting the Aboriginal people many years ago. Remember, you could get a license to go and shoot natives on Sundays or on Thursdays, whatever it was. Shoot blackfellas. That's legit stuff that was brought about by the colonial settler state that's here. Shoot the blackfellas, we can get rid of them. We claim the country if there's none left. So when you hear people saying that now in these modern times, I'm deeply concerned about that, because they're going to start to declare war on the natives who actually own the place. And Australia must disarm its people. If they're talking like that, they must disarm its people that could possibly go down that road of craziness that you know, we'll just shoot the natives and politicians. How silly can that be? And what will it achieve other than bring Australia into disrepute?
Yeah, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumper Bipper Media 98.7 FM. I hope you're listening and enjoying the conversation. We'll be back after the break.
I just wanna grow old, be on my country, one with my mother, feel her above me. Sun in my face while the riverbed hugs me, but without our mother, then we all have nothing. Can't even fathom the way they mistreat her, leave her with nothing and suck dry a river. This is a world that we leave for our children, a place left for ruins, cause leaders don't listen. I'm sick of us preaching, by killing our motherland. Best believe she got that upper hand. You heard her, she'll reset herself again. Her biggest mistake was ever creating man. And this is what they done to her. Is it too late to fix? Maybe it's time that they listen to old way, cause old way is the way she's safe for our kids.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We're talking about the law and why Yidinji can actually move forward on a global level with the confidence of being just and right in at law and whatever it's LAWLORE. Although we don't really dabble with the tribal law because that's not really our job as a government. That's up to the tribe and the elders. That's the most important thing. And really, they are the boss in their true and correct capacity as Yidinji elders, and as Nyanlanda are the most superior voice on this earth, on the Yidinji territory. And there's only one that's higher, that's God, obviously. But Yirilim, this is an amazing journey, and I know that while these conversations are great, how does that look on an education level with teaching our mob about sovereignty and civics education? I know that we've got a few things out at the moment that we can do for the presentations to anybody, but ultimately it'd be great for all educational facilities on the territory to learn about Yidinji and the absolute wonderful society and world of the Yidinji people, as well as obviously, Kunganji, Jabbaga, everybody, they had their own unique identity in that. And that's an important thing to remember that, you know, Malambara is different to Gimo Malambara, and we all won, but same, everyone has their own house, and that's a really important thing to help tell the world.
Yeah, of course, there's going to be an enormous outreach as we move forward in sovereignty that we'll have to, you know, come together with the Australian system that will be under our law and one of the big changes that really does happen is, like, if you look at the Australian education system or the Queensland education system, it is under their government processes, and that's where it falls short. You know, you go back 100,000 years, how many thousand years you want to go back here, it's always been a cultural event. It's always an action that is culturally driven. It has the sustenance of the creator behind it. It works based on moral activity. It is about the person who is teaching. It's not what they know. It's who they are as a human being. And unfortunately, that's not the state when you have an administration running your education system. So for Yidinji to step up, the biggest difference, one of the first and biggest differences that will be made, is it will be under a cultural system. And in that cultural system, we'll have the opportunity to, of course, share all that knowledge of the past, of all the different what we're now calling cantons within the Yidinji Nation, and all the different practices and so forth that have happened there that are shareable at that level. And it's going to be an exciting event. Everyone will move forward because it will demonstrate that the social structure is really a reflection of how we treat the land, and that's what the Yidinji people have always done, treated it properly.
Yeah, and it's good that you're right. While the Yidinji government will facilitate something like that, it ultimately comes down to the mums and dads, the elders, that wanting to push certain things that they want their children to learn, and that could be names of places, well, everything. I mean, they want to, you know, we want to show them the whole world, and they go and move to these places and ultimately live in some of these places overseas if they want to, and learn how to be diplomats or cultural practitioners and things like that. We've already got a lot of local, well, let's say artists, Yidinji artists that have travelled overseas for their work, and just amazing. I think that the world is hungry for that too. And Vicky, I'll bring you back in because it's something that when the ambassador to Mercia, Wessex and Northumbria, Gulladu of Stonycroft, came earlier this year, there was an absolute hunger from a European point of view for tribal leadership, because the world has gone a little bit skew-whiff, he would say, and the Yidinji tribe and the elders and the society has something that the world has sort of not forgotten about, maybe, but just lost touch of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the world has gone to a point where capitalism and greed and corruption is just literally out of control. Very few people control the narrative on the planet now. And when you look at the traditional tribal culture, everyone played a role, from the children right up to the oldest person in that tribe. They all did things collectively to benefit the tribe's existence. And we've lost that, because we've got other people putting in narratives that it's all about money, it's all about regurgitating information, and not community living and doing things for the benefit of the community. So the propaganda that we've been pumped in for the last couple hundred years now has failed. It really has failed, because people are out for themselves. They think they can live in a house, be totally independent from everyone else. That's where the sovereign citizen movement's coming from. I want to be independent in my own house. Well, you're not. You're part of a street. You're part of a suburb. You're part of a town. You're part of a state or a government. You're part of the bigger picture. If you look at it like that, then you do care for your local environment much better. You are the custodian of your little patch that you are responsible for. You can't just have your patch clean and throw all your rubbish next door. So I like the tribal belief that we are here to serve the community, because without the community, we all fail, because one stick on its own breaks, but collectively it's strong.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important thing, and it's still a process, Ganyara, but it's an important one, and one that's still strong, the community plan. Identity, for example, is very strong. And, you know, even when I was growing up, I went overseas a couple of times. And, oh, you're Aboriginal? Oh, my gosh. Like, I've never met an Aboriginal. And you guys have been living for thousands of years and this, that and the other. And sort of went over my head when I was younger, you know. But when you think about it, you know, this being one of the last continents to have some sort of contact with Europeans in a modern day sense, 150 years. Apparently next year, since the British came to Gimoy. It's a blink of an eye, really. All of our ages here at the table exceed 150 years. So it's not, I mean, Gudjigud used to talk about this when he was doing Welcome to Countries and things like that, and acknowledgement of country quite often. But really, for those listening who are from a tribe from this continent, you have an absolute responsibility and obligation. It doesn't matter if you've gone to university or not, or school, doesn't matter. You've got knowledge in your mind to share with your neighbour or your people that you live with, for example. It may not be deep and meaningful, but if you can fish and hunt, guess what? When the world falls apart and there's no internet and everything else and everyone wants food, instead of killing each other, they can all help each other. So these are the things that are really important. Like I want to talk to family about that, nieces and nephews and son. Do what you can and share, but also be selective on when you and who you share with, because people have agendas and stuff. They might want to use that for themselves. And you know, I know a lot of our mob have told stories the people and then find out some guy's written or girl has written a PhD and taken all the glory about this tribal knowledge and that. So it is a relationship based on trust, and that spiritual discernment is very important when people are also going down this pathway. And there's a good saying by a French philosopher. It says, "La sovereignabilité consiste à bien connaître le prix de chaud." And it's saying there that the true sovereignty is knowing the value of things. What is money? What is a piece of paper? What is that? What is this? So when we're talking about Australia, what is the value of Australia? What is the value of Yidinji? If Edingi is created by God to be here at this particular time to provide leadership to the globe, then what is it? Who is it? And where are they? And that's a very, very big question. But it's something that everyone can think about this week or today or whenever in the future about how do I fit in the whole picture of things.
The most important part is education. It really is to understand what's going down, what's going on. Now, we talk about tribal stuff. Australia has no right to talk about our stuff. This is the important part. You know, you see Australians writing these PhDs about tribal protocols or laws or the secret, you know, mushrooms that cured health or whatever. They have no right to talk about that because that is Australian education. They educate on how Australia got here. That's all. They're only allowed to go back to, I suppose, when the British come, if they want to go back that far. But Australia, remember, was created in 1901. That's the totality of Australia's history. Now, the British were here before that, in, you could say, 1770 when Cook come along. So that's the totality of the British history for here. But ours goes back before that. And this is where our people have to educate their own people, our own tribal people, about we're not Australian. Australia's got no right to tell us, you got history back here. Australia's got no right to talk about our history. This is the important part to remember. So it's up to us to educate ourselves, up to us to bring along that old law. It's up to our lot, not Australians, to educate our tribal people. Because how do I know what Arundel law, you know, as a Yidinji elder, how do I know what Arundel law has got to do with here? I know through marriage that there's connections, but Arundel law is Arundel law, for example. That's in the middle of the driest part of Australia. Their law is very specific to them. Our law is a rainforest mob, which is very specific to the rainforest lot. So you understand that it's up to us. We shouldn't be. We talk about Arundel being there. We don't teach their law to our people, other than when you go into there, you get permission to go in, and vice versa. When they come here, they ask permission to come into here. They understand why. But we talk about Pacific law. You know, you're talking about the cantons within the Greater Yidinji Nation. I call it the Greater Yidinji speaking lot. That mob, you know, because a lot of people speak Yidin, not just around Cairns or up on the table ends or whatever. There's a greater mob that speak Yidin, and they all understand the same laws and protocols. And we've got to teach each other what those laws and protocols were, because they are being forcefully forgotten. The Australian government is forcing the Yidinji people to be inside Australia and don't speak your language, don't talk about your law, don't do this, don't do that. But remember, it's up to us now to go and recreate all our stuff to bring it back alive. And if we don't bring it back alive, it will die. And that's something that I won't let happen on my watch, you know, while we're part of the show. While we're still alive, we'll keep pushing the agenda. The agenda is Yidinji is the authority on this part of the land here. There is no one else above us here. Australia comes second. And if you want to bring other stuff in, you know, it's going to be subject to the Australian law even. So it's very important that we educate our people. We bring them up to speed on all this. It's the job of the elders. It's a very important job to not fight and not bicker over stupid little things inside Australia. And Australia want you fighting over Australian money. Oh, he's got a new Toyota over there. Oh, they got a PBC down there that's got the great building on it and it's got a great seat. They all just sit there and do nothing. They achieve nothing in the way of sovereignty. They're not achieving what the tribe need. So it's everywhere. So native title, PBC stuff, land council, and I know you'll say, oh, land council have a role. They got a role inside Australia. Not inside our world, because we know where our world is. And that's why we went forward, you know, 12 or 13 years ago to say the government's back. No more bickering, no more arguing. We actually wrote to the whole world going back in 2013. We wrote to the world and said, land council does not speak for us. You know, they got no say over our country. We are the boss on our country. And it's rather funny because, you know, we went to a couple of those land council meetings and we got kicked out. The elders that really stood up for sovereignty got kicked out. Why? Because that's Australia in there. We're back in our tribal status. And the elders got kicked out because they weren't being Australian. So no one was allowed, if you weren't Australian, you weren't allowed inside the land council meeting. It was so comical to see. It was so real. Police everywhere. And at one of those meetings, a New Zealand woman who was a lawyer from the land council, local land council, she jumped the counter. He jumped the table and was going to punch one of the elders. Now, what bigger offence could you make? One of the very senior men elders was going to get punched by a woman from New Zealand. How did that play out? You know, it was basically the letter was sent off to land council. You better get rid of that woman off our country. Get her out of here before tribal punishment is exacted. Guess what? Next week she was gone. I think she was sent to Townsville or Rocky, somewhere down there. It just goes to show how real the law is If they're going to upset the tribe, that law is very real. It can be there, but, you know, Yidinji with its wisdom is not about conflict and fighting. It's about bringing Australia to heal, bringing us to a position to say, look, we need to talk about this, of how you claim to assert sovereignty. Once again, it's education about educating our people about where their position is, but also about educating Australia where its position is. And when you ask for where's the doctrine, how you can assert sovereignty over our people, they haven't got one. They definitely haven't got one. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, Yirrkala, it's one of those things where, you know, people's energy is important. And when you, if you're going to get emotional about something or angry or something, it's usually it has to be a right way to get worked up. But unfortunately, inside a system where Aboriginal people are getting locked up every day, we are seeing homeless people walk into this office nearly every day, like our mob, like, you know, looking for help. There has to be this going back to the original model, which was working here and still works today. And I think for those people who are listening who may not even like what we talk about, they're still going to have to acknowledge that that world that they operate in has severe problems. And all we're saying is we're trying to hold it to account, but not only that, but put maybe them at the forefront in a model that is the right one. And that's something sometimes it's hard for people to see that because, oh, well, there's a saying, you can't beat them, you join them. I'm sorry, the Yidinji Nation is not doing that. The elders that have spoken to us and to you, Ganyara, like I said, I'm Johnny come lately onto the scene, but I'm here to assist the nation to regain its rightful position. But these are things that are really can be testing to you, Lemon, and very difficult.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's you hit it on the head, Ganyara. You know, education is going to be important. It continues. It's why we're doing this to some degree. It really is about understanding that there are other choices. You know, 4 years ago, I didn't know there was another choice to being Australian on the country that I was born on. You know, I was born on Yidinji country first, and then I had Australian birth certificate second, which is determines where you what law you live under. And now I have a Yidinji birth certificate, so it allows me to choose which law I want to be under. And of course, people are suffering under Australian law. It's very obvious. And it continues to happen at the worst possible levels for the majority of people. And there is a better way that the Yidinji way has done it. And of course, that was one of the reasons that I came into the Yidinji Nation, was that I wanted to see a change in the way things were in Australia. And with mechanisms like laws that are written down, there isn't a mechanism within the law to change the law. There are things that you can change in law, but there isn't things that you can change in the system. The system remains the same. So the system that creates the laws isn't changeable. That's what I discovered. You know, you can't change that system. So it really requires a totally new approach. And, of course, the best new approach is the oldest one that exists in the world.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the world today. We'll be back after the break with some final comments.
What's up, you mob? It's Miss Kinana, and you're listening to Bama Bibra Media. Oof, let's go. A black Britney Spears.
I'm a deadly. Yeah, welcome back to the show. Some final comments, Vico. We'll go to you first. Some observations and words of encouragement, for example.
Yeah, one of the things that Yirrkala said on the nail, we can't change the system. The system is broken. Economies are failing because the system doesn't support growth and people actually contributing to the society because they're struggling to live on their own right. So Yidinji does offer that digital free trade zone. Yidinji does offer a freer environment for an individual to become successful and create excess so that they can contribute to society in a better way and the way that they choose to do it as well. So I think the conversation today was very thought-provoking, and I'm looking forward to hearing next week's show.
Yirrkala, we'll go to you next. Some final words from you.
Yeah, now that's the ongoing offer that Yidinji has to all the nations of this incredible country that we live on. You know, we are here to help and support any action that you want to take towards sovereignty, and we will be here, no doubt.
And Ganyaro, we'll get some final comments from you.
Probably the most important thing to remember, we're not doing this for one Aussie dollar. We're not interested in the Aussie dollar. We don't need the Aussie dollar because, guess what? We're the underwriters. If we're going to be the underwriters, as they said in the Mabo determination, High Court determination, not our, we know who we are, but they said the Aboriginals are the underwriters. We're going to act like the underwriters. We don't want to kick mums and dads out of their house. We want mums and dads to have their house. Guess what? That house is attached to our land. I remember writing to a couple of big banks going back a few years, said, you want to have this house as liability as collateral against against the loan inside Australia? Don't touch our house. Guess what? The bank didn't touch that house. Let them have it. They wrote the loan off because that's our house. That was not a collateral against the Australian or the international bank. We know who we are. We're doing this for a reason. We're doing it on purpose. We're doing this to try and secure the future of Australia, because if we don't, you know, if we don't settle the past and then secure the future for Australia, Australia has no future. What would happen should Chinese or American or British or Korean come in and say, oh, we need to do a treaty? Guess what would happen? I know there was protest over at Pine Gap recently. That's our under country. Wonder what would happen if the Aboriginal people said, oh, look, Pine Gap, we will sign that over to the North Koreans. What chaos would that create? Think about that as a thought-provoking instant, when we don't want one Aussie dollar. We don't want to take the taxpayers' money. We want to try and give them something. We want to try and marry their stuff to our stuff so they can be here. Think about that for the rest of the week.
Yeah, thanks for that. And anyway, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this show. Remember that God created the Yidinji Nation and all the other tribes on this earth, and ultimately the highest form of law comes from the Creator. And anyway, as a follower of the boss, I'll say that in the name of Yeshua Jesus, and we'll catch you next week. And hopefully we'll have Bumi on board, because I know that I love having him on board as well. Anyway, we'll catch you next week. Thanks for joining in. Kaling.